Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Wednesday, May 15th, 2019, and this is episode 165 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today across the country from Georgia on his farm is Eric Nathanson. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I can't believe it's May 15th already. We're one quarter of the way of the season. How's the weather out there today?
It has not rained in this area, in the Bay Area, in May. In 8 years. So it's raining today, which is unusual. So we certainly need the rain, but looks like it might cancel my Little League game tonight. You did say that it looks like there might be a weather window for the Giants today for their afternoon game against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, somebody put it out there. I think Pav said that the Giants brass thinks they have a window, so they're going to try to get it started on time.
All right, good. Well, you know, I don't know if we want to watch that kind of baseball today that we're about to talk about, but. Maybe another off day could be good.
Yeah, I looked ahead, and there's no real chance for them to reschedule this because Toronto doesn't really come to the West Coast again except for a three-game set in L.A., so they're going to try like hell to get this game in, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, they will. It has not been going well for the Giants as of late. They are now 17-24, last place in the NL West, 9.5 games back of L.A., and they've gone 2-4 since we last recorded last Monday. We're going to go through this right now, but it's not just the performance of the Giants and the starting pitching and the first inning woes that still continue, but it's also been a lot of moves going on with the Giants, a lot of transactions, a lot of up and down, huge revolving door for this team, which I think we should talk about in terms of team chemistry and how the players feel about their chances on staying. Am I going to be on this team in a week? You know, a lot of these kids, and I call them kids because a lot of them are very young. They really don't know, and that's also transitioned into maybe some internal conflict going on with how this new leadership is running the Giants, and specifically, it's really exploded this week with comments made by Derek Holland and talk of his fake injury. So I think probably the best thing to do is I'm just going to go ahead and play his comments. Everything's about a minute here, so if you haven't heard it, you can interpret it yourself. I don't want our opinion to necessarily represent his thoughts. So here's Derek Holland being interviewed and making these controversial statements.
If there's anything in particular that brought on, or just they just needed a long guy.
To be honest, I have no idea what they're doing. And I don't mean that by belching them. It's more from the front office. We keep changing a lot of things. I did a fake injury, so I'm not happy about that. So, but at the end of the day, I'm going to do whatever they ask me to do.
So you're okay with it as long as you get the ball whenever
you Yeah. I'm going to be here for my teammates. That's what it's all about. These guys mean a lot to me, and, you know, they've helped me out with fixing myself last year. So I got to do what's asked, and this is one of those times.
Does it feel a little bit unnerving then to kind of maybe not feel like you understand always why the moves are being made that are?
I mean, you're never going to understand for the most part. It's more of just, you know, when that time comes, get the ball and go. And I'll just always be out there for those guys. I mean, again, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going on. But at the same time, you know, when you get that ball or you get to go out there and play, we're going to give everything we got.
So, yeah. Real interesting comments there by Derek Holland. And if you haven't seen the video, I pick up a lot of the facial tics. There's a lot of little smirks and frustration coming from his face. And that's just my interpretation. I think the other big thing is he uses the pronoun we a lot, not I don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. And there are some reports from Baggerly saying that it really is representative of how a lot of the pitching staff feels. They really don't know what the hell is going on. They don't know why these moves are being made, and they feel like there's a lot of uncertainty going on with all of their assignments and eventual assignments for what, you know, they're going to be doing in the pen or starting, or if there's going to be an opener, or if they're going to be DFA'd, or if they're going to carry 13 pitchers or three catchers. I don't know. How do you feel about all this, Eric?
I read it the same way the night it happened. I was actually all over the Twitters with that because, for one, I respect the hell out of Derek Holland for feeling like he can step up and say something. From the moment he said what he said, I never felt that it was just him grumbling. That definitely came from the entirety of the clubhouse. That definitely came from him talking to guys and having the general feel. I know Holland is only his second year with the Giants, but he has stepped up as a leader in that clubhouse. He's a veteran, and the way that Pence embraced him last year really brought him into the Giants' fold and made him de facto one of the leaders of the team this season. So I am certain, like you said, that, you know, the use of we, and he seemed so calm and cool and collected when he said it that in my mind, he knew 100% what he was doing as he said it. And I don't blame him for being frustrated. I'm sure it's very tough for a team to have new management come in and suddenly overturn the apple cart and things just, you know, fall everywhere and then not have any idea of how they're going to clean it all up just yet. So I get the feeling that the players in the locker room feel that they are not as informed as they could be on the decisions. Now, it's not their decision to make. They are just, you know, plug and play. They are, you know, just pieces in a machine. So they don't necessarily need to know that. But with the way that the Giants have run over the last few years, they would definitely be in the loop. And having Zaidi come in and change the locker room constantly, and we're going to get to all those transactions soon, has to put a bit of a strain on a team who's trying to build cohesion when they feel like they can't because, you know, how do I know if I want to play for this guy if he's not going to be here tomorrow? You know, what's going to make this guy play for me if he's not going to be here tomorrow? So I think Holland was venting more than his own frustration, and I saw a lot of fans get on Holland. Screaming about, well, pitch better and things like that. And I'm of the mindset, I don't know about you, but I'm not rich. I am not some corporate CEO. I'm not management. I'm a worker bee. And Derek's a worker bee. So I relate to the worker bee. I will always relate to the worker bee. So when they have problems, I totally get why they would say something. You know, if I'm working at a job and even if I'm not performing at my highest level, but there's stuff going on and I say something, I shouldn't be shut down just because I might not be the best at my job. The points are still valid. And I think that that's what came from this is Holland's points were still valid. Now, as far as the fake injury thing, I'm not shocked that he feels that way, but they did have medical stuff to show that there was an injury. And that's, we know, you know, we've been around the game long enough. We know things like that get tweaked. If you're a ball player who doesn't have bumps and bruises by this point in the season, you know, then you're not a good ball player. And everybody does. And so any IL stint can be justified at this point. So him saying fake, I think he just used the wrong terminology. Mm-hmm. To him, it was fake. But on the overall whole, it wasn't fake. And then, you know, it caused a bit of a stir in Giants land for a night, and it forced Zaidi to have to sit there and answer questions the next day. And I know we're going to listen to that audio too. Zaidi, just from – you talk about watching body language. Zaidi did not look comfortable answering these questions after Holland brought this up. He was definitely not happy this happened.
No, he wasn't. I agree with you. I do think that he was really trying to represent the feelings of the pitching staff. He had his hands behind – this I'm talking about – Holland, he had his hands behind his back. He was very calm, cool, and collected. I don't think he was in the heat of the moment and said things he probably shouldn't have said. I do agree also with the fake injury. I don't think that the Giants brass said, okay, we're making something up completely out of thin air so you can take a rest and we don't have to see your 6.75 ERA out there. No, I think, just like you said, every ball player is playing with some nick, some twinge, some pulled muscle, some soreness, some bruise. And it's just a gray area, right? It's where some players are absolutely willing to play through it, some are not. And then sometimes management will look at those and go, well, maybe it's contributing to your poor performance. Why don't we give you 10 days off and see what happens? So I do think it was more like that. But like you said, I do have Zaidi's comments here. It's a couple of minutes. And here's Farhan the day after Holland made those comments.
You know, I know Boach mentioned he has an open door policy. So do I. So, I think every organization would like to create an environment where guys feel comfortable talking about their concerns in-house. So, and to the extent guys don't feel comfortable, that's on me. You know, maybe I'm not, haven't been around as much as I should be, or haven't been as successful as much as I should be. But a lot of times, you know, you're dealing with gray areas with injuries. I mean, you know, if a guy gets, you know, hit by a truck, you know, and can't walk out on the field, that's, I guess, you know, an unequivocal injury. But there's a lot of gray area beyond that. You know, guys want to play. I love the fact that Derek wants to be out there. It's one of the reasons we brought him back. You know, even when we met with him and told him we thought it made sense for him to take the start off, and that because of the way the schedule lined up, it really was only going to be one turn in the rotation. He wasn't happy about it then, so we were aware of that. But again, a lot of times, especially on the pitching front, it becomes a gray area where it's not necessarily as black or white as we can't put this guy on the field, but maybe he thinks he can perform, maybe he thinks he can go out there, but what kind of results are you going to get? What kind of performance are you going to get? In that situation, we just made the judgment, you know, between the doctors, the coaching staff, and the front office, it makes sense for him to get a start off and to get back in there. So,
because in Derek's comments, there was sort of an implicit assumption baked in that what he doesn't understand is what the front office is doing, not what the coach is doing.
Yeah.
I mean, there is an assumption there that there's not a cooperation at play, which, did you want to address that?
Yeah, no, I was surprised by that. And, you know, again, I think sometimes there's a gap between perception and reality. You know, every, you know, move that we've made transactionally on the 25 man or otherwise, you know, certainly talk to Boach about it, and when it made sense, kind of talk to the rest of the staff about it.
So there you go, Farhan. Yeah, not looking entirely comfortable saying, you know, a lot, and pausing and stuttering, and you know, it's not his forte as public speaking. He's a known baseball savant. So this is the blowback you get from players, especially blue collar, old school type mentality players that don't like this new approach. And I'm, you know, this is before the opener they used this week, but just the revolving door. They don't know what management is doing. And now, of course, this fake injury that Derek is talking about. So it's an unfortunate thing that happened. We'll see if there's going to be any ramifications of it. I'm curious as to when Holland comes back. I know he's in the bullpen now, but if his performance continues at its current pace, if his ERA is over 6 for another couple of months, and now what he said against management, I mean, maybe his time is short. I know he's getting paid a decent amount this year, so they don't want to lose that money. They may seek to trade him, but I don't think they would get much out of him. So I really don't know what the future lies for what, you know, for Derek Holland at this point.
Well, a couple of things that stuck out to me from what Zaidi said. He mentioned the gap between perception and reality, and I think it's up to him to close that gap. That's where I think he failed a little bit. Yeah. And then he claims he has an open door policy, but I don't think the players buy that. If you are in his position, it's not like the players are going to go upstairs to the GM's office, well, the president's office, and discuss things, meaning Zaidi needs to make himself more available in the clubhouse for the players in case they do have these concerns so that they do feel that they can come to him with that. Mm-hmm. And like I blame both sides probably could have taken different tacks here, and none of this may have had to happen, but it did. And, you know, I think back, the first time I ever covered a Giants game was in Tampa, and I talked to Brian Sabian for like 10 minutes, you know, who was the GM at the time. It was back in 2013. And it just sticks out to me that on August 3rd, he was traveling with the team. So he was accessible. So when you talk about an open door policy, it more means he was there. He was present so that players could talk to him. And I'm sure the players have no problem talking to Bochy, but they're unsure right now where the power in the organization stands, because there's a bit of a power struggle going on between Bochy and Zaidi. And it may not be a public power struggle, but I mean, there is one. If there wasn't, Pablo would have been cut at the end of spring training, but Bochy made sure he was put on this team, and frankly, is the only reason to watch lately.
Absolutely.
You know, so there's, I think it's on Zaidi for not being more accessible. And I get that he doesn't necessarily need to clue them in on every single plan, but he does need to be willing to hear their concerns. And Holland, he had to have felt like the clubhouse was not being heard to say this. And Zaidi coming back like that, I mean, he's learning too. This is the beginning of a long process. And so he wants to be as transparent as he can without giving away his hand. And sometimes that will lead to pitfalls like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, Farhan is definitely going to be learning with this team. And I think he's just counting the days until Bochy retires, to be honest. I could be wrong about that, but I think he definitely wants to have a hand-picked manager that is more in alignment with his philosophy, his baseball philosophy, and someone who he might be able to control a little bit more. He certainly cannot come in here in year one and control Bochy in his last year. That's just impossible. Bochy is definitely making concessions, and we'll talk about that right now. A huge concession, and I don't think you can blame Bochy for saying, what the hell, let's just go ahead and try it. But the opener is something that I never thought I'd see the Giants do, at least in the next couple of years. But here we are last night, and Nick Vincent opened up for the Giants. And, of course, why don't you talk a little bit about why? I don't think Giants fans really have to be told, but let's go ahead and summarize why this finally came to a head.
Well, the Giants, the first inning is the death knell for the San Francisco Giants. They've been outscored, including heading into yesterday's game, they had been outscored 42-5 in the first inning. And a lot of the pitchers were falling behind early. This past week showed that against Colorado, Cincinnati. And so the Giants, like you said, had a, well, let's try something different, because, you know, Shark got lit up last Saturday in the first inning. D-Rod struggled early in the game on Friday of last week. Against Colorado, they gave up first inning runs, I believe, in both games in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So they tried Nick Vincent as the opener last night, with Beedy piggybacking off of him. And while in theory that's a great idea because of what they're doing, in practice it blew up in their face. Vincent gave up 3 runs last night against the Blue Jays in the first inning, and they now have been outscored 45-5 in the first inning this season. Meaning, and I'm going to steal your line here, that means they average being down 1 run after the first inning. And it's like, I think even more than that, if you really, oh no, okay, I see what you put under there, when you parse it out. And so, like you said, Bochy's kind of like, well, I'll just try whatever sticks at this point. Because he's a man on his way out, so he doesn't have anything to lose.
Yeah, and one game doesn't prove the effectiveness or non-effectiveness of an opener either way. I think it's important to point that out. I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants do try it again. They're not going to try it anytime real soon, because it just blew up in their face. So they're not ruling it out, but it's just one of those things. There's some sort of voodoo curse on the first inning this year. I don't know what the hell is going on, but 45-5... they've been outscored by 40 runs in the first inning, and they're even after that for the rest of the year. So their run differential is a minus 40. So that's completely attributable to just the first inning. One run is, yeah, that average difference per game. So basically what you're saying is, okay, the Giants play an 8-inning game, and they start down 1-0. That's basically what they're faced right now. And it doesn't always sound that bad, but if you're always down an average of 1 run every game, that's absolutely going to affect you, because look at what the Giants are in 1-run games, right? We should look at 2-run games, actually, see what they're all there. But it's really bad. And so what I did is I looked at individual pitching stats for just the first inning Obviously, we have most of the starters and now one opener. So we have Derek Holland. He has 5 earned runs in 7 innings. These are all just, remember, first innings, so 7 first innings. We got D-Rod, 6 earned runs in 8 innings. Bumgarner, 8 earned runs in 9 innings. Pomerantz, 7 in 7. The worst by far is Jeff Samardzija, 11 earned runs in 8 innings. And this is crazy. His ERA for the season is a 3.54 right now, I believe. His first inning ERA is a 12.38. He's given up 16 earned runs total this year, 11 in the first. Okay? That means he's only given up 5 runs in 33 innings outside of the first inning. That's pretty damn good. Yeah. 5 runs in 33 innings. That's excellent. So Samardzija, if it wasn't for his performance after the first, his ERA might be in the sevens like Holland and company. Tyler Beattie with a smaller sample size, 3-1. And, of course, Nick Vincent, 3-1 as well. So overall, it's been 45 runs, but 43 earned in 41 innings. That is a 9.44 ERA in the first inning. Ugh! And that's just, it's horrendous.
Which is why it makes sense to give the opener a shot. And my, I don't have a beef with them trying the opener. I don't have the beef. I don't have a beef with the Giants trying anything new right now. This is an experimental year. This franchise is changing, and that's how it's going to be. What I do have issue with is who they chose to be the opener.
Yeah, I thought it was an odd choice.
I don't understand it. Nick Vincent, he has had a good season. I coming into the game, 1, 2, 3, he had given up 4 earned runs all season in 2.425 in 24 innings. But he's the mop-up man. When you look at when he comes into games, the Giants, he has come into the game 4 times with the Giants down more than 4 runs, 5 times with the Giants down 4 runs, 1 time with the Giants down 3 runs, twice with the Giants down 2 runs, and only twice in a high leverage situation when the game was tied, if you don't include last night 0-0. So he's been a mop-up man. The team was 2-12 in games that he appeared in heading into last night's game. So why was he the choice? And I threw this out there last night. I was just spitballing. I have two thoughts. One, they got together and they decided to use Vincent because they didn't want to use any of their high leverage guys. Or two, Bochy chose Vincent as kind of a way to, I don't want to say sabotage, but maybe a little bit. Because
I see what you're saying.
Right. I mean, you got other guys that come into tighter games. You know, Trevor Gott's been into tighter games. Mark Melancon even has been in tighter games. Reyes Maranta. Hell, even Sam Dyson. These are all guys that have pitched high leverage situations this season and that Bochy trusts in high leverage situations. So if you're viewing the first inning as a high leverage situation, why do you throw in the mop-up man?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense to me. And so I don't have a problem with them trying it. I have an issue with how they tried it and who they did. So I really feel like the Giants stood up.
Boy, it's just rough again. And, you know, we'll go into some of the details of the game, but I was listening to it. I was driving around town and meeting my kids at the shopping center. And it was just like, are you kidding me? Is this actually happening again? It doesn't matter who you put out there. I do think if Pablo pitched the first inning, it would be no runs. Guaranteed.
He's their best pitcher.
They should just have Pablo open every other game. I mean, he has the arm strength to do that, right? Just one inning every other day. Perfect. Save your pitching staff. Then have your guy come in. Although Pablo's a bit of a bulk guy himself, but
that's fun to think about. But like when we talk about the opener, when it first started, when Tampa first broached the idea, it was they actually started it with Sergio.
They did.
The whole reason was because they were facing lineups that were stacked with right-handers at the top of the lineup. So they sent Sergio out there to get through the tough, meaty part of the order in the first or second inning. Whereas I feel like the Giants just used an opener for opener's sake. There wasn't strategy behind it like there should have been. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't a matchup strategy that was involved. And, you know, Vlad Guerrero Jr. really put a dent into that when he hit the ball of 437 feet in the first inning.
Yeah. For his first major league home run, and then of course he hit one later, just late, another late. That guy is just, wow, he's going to be a good player despite his struggles.
Oh my, he's got that head whipping bat sound where if you're doing something else and he connects, your head immediately whips to, oh my God, who was that? You know?
Yeah. Just like his dad, man. Just a freaking clone. It's insane. Well, a little chunkier, but. Well, okay, so the Giants had all of that drama this week, tried an opener, that failed. But this all ties into what we were just talking about with Derek Holland's comments. They kind of don't know what the hell management is doing. And I think that ties right into not just an opener or fake injuries, but also the revolving door that the Giants have had. So many transactions, and I'm not going to count every single one this year. I don't even know how many players have been on the 25-man, but I think it's something like 37 or 38 players have been on the 25-man. And it's freaking the middle of May. I mean, this is a joke, right? But just starting in May, May 1st, they optioned Ty Block to Sacramento, brought up Stephen Vogt, placed Logan Webb on restricted list. And then the next day, they acquired Francisco Peña from the Cardinals for cash and signed him to Sacramento. The next day, May 3rd, they recalled Beattie from Sacramento, selected the contract of Mike Gerber from Sacramento, placed Kratz on the 10-day IL, and then, of course, DFA'd Gerardo Parra. The next day, May 4th, okay, 4 days in a row, they recalled Pat Venditti, so I always do that, from Sacramento, and they optioned Beattie back to Sacramento since he had options. Then May 7th, they recalled Williams. Do you pronounce his name Jerez or Jerez? I don't even know, actually.
It's Jerez. Just because I happened to catch some of the broadcast when he pitched.
Thanks. They called him from Sacramento and then selected the contracts of Donovan Solano and Mac Williamson, of course, which was the big story of when he came up. And then announced that Parra refused his outright assignment to Sacramento and elected free agency. And then they designated Solarte and Venditti for assignment. So those two guys are gone. Then the 8th, they optioned Jerez back to Sacramento and activated Holland from the 10-day IL. The next day, May 9th, Pomeranz was placed on the IL and Buster Posey was placed on the 7-day concussion list. And they recalled Aramis Garcia and Beattie back up from Sacramento on the May 11th. They claimed Aaron Ather from waivers from Philly and then designated Andrew Moore for assignment, activated Eric Kratz from the IL, and they optioned D-Rod to Sacramento. And then 3 days later, they DFA'd Eric Kratz because he has just not been good defensively or offensively, and they have three other catches. They certainly rank above him, and I think we all can agree with that at this point.
Yeah, he was definitely, once they had the three catchers on roster and none of them were Buster, you knew that one of those guys was going to end up going. And then I wouldn't be shocked if Garcia gets sent down Friday when Buster gets activated, because they say he's been doing baseball activities. But they needed to do that to get Beattie back up there. They needed to do the Kratz thing to get Althea onto the team, and he was a bench player. He was in uniform last night. You're right. They've used 36 players so far this season. Last year, they used a total of 45. And Sean Anderson, who's making his major league debut today, will be 37. So we're talking mid-May, right, one quarter through the season, and they're already creeping up on, you know, September roster status. It is a revolving door. Now, on the flip side, I do feel like they're getting incrementally better. I know Parra went out and has been lighting the world on fire for the Nationals and killing the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other than that, I mean, Vogt has been able to step up and start doing things. But, you know, Mac is an upgrade over Connor Joe and Michael Reed, regardless if Mac's still a quadruple A player.
And you Giants fans out there that keep bashing on Mac, I'm not saying that he's a Major League Baseball player, but he is better than those other two that started the season. I'm just, come on. He just is. Right. He just is. And this is his last chance, right? He has DFA'd. He passed through waivers, accepted his assignment to Sacramento, knowing that maybe he'll have one more chance, and now he does, because obviously he's out of options. They can't send him back down, and he had to be guaranteed to be on the 25-man roster if they promoted him. So they're going to give him a very, very long look, and it started out really well in the first game. Hasn't been so good lately, but that's why one of the reasons why the Giants have now picked up Althea. He's a journeyman. He's got almost 1,000 at-bats in the major leagues. He's got a career average of 222. 36 bombs, 148 RBI. He did have a couple of decent years with Philly. His best was probably 2017. He had 372 at-bats, so most of a full year he hit 272 with 19 bombs and 65 runs batted in. So the Giants aren't necessarily expecting that kind of production, because the very next year it dropped to 181 and 243 at-bats. And this year he started out with Philly going 1 for 29, and that's when they released him. So we'll see.
Yeah, but that's why it's a revolving door, though, because it's the back end of the roster that is churning. It's not the front end of the roster.
No.
And that's what Zaidi does. This is the pattern that I talked about that he did in L.A., that they were constantly shuffling the bench guys and sending guys up and sending guys down. And the 25-man roster is almost like a 28-man roster at that point. And it works. It works when you have the right players. And we're only a few months into the Zaidi regime, so I don't expect it all to work right away. So I'm okay with the transactions as a fan. I really am. But I understand where somebody like Derek Holland is coming from and how they feel that with this revolving door, they don't know who's going to be there tomorrow. And, you know, sometimes that lights a fire under some guys, and sometimes it shuts them down. And the Giants are going to show us who they are. And like you said, Mac is on his last – he's on his last go-round. And if he didn't get a couple hits last night like he did – actually, I think he only got one hit, but he got on base three times. One of them was a strikeout. I don't think that – which he didn't even run right away for. He totally deserved to be thrown out. But I really do think he's on his last legs. And they said that they're going to give him a long leash, but how long will that leash really be – if he continues to perform hitting 208, which is, I think, what he's at right now, mm-hmm. you know, but the difference between 208 and 292 is two base hits. Cause Stephen Vogt has had the exact same amount of at bats as him, 24, and he has seven hits. Williamson's had 24 at bats and he has five hits. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's a big number at this point. The sample size is very small. So yeah. They're going to give Mac a chance, but this roster churn, it's going to keep happening. We're going to see a lot of different faces go through this organization this year.
Yeah, this is going to be weird if, you know, again, assuming we're still doing this podcast here, let's say in 5 years, and if we ever do the year that was, you know, 2019, and go, wow, I don't even remember half these guys that were on the roster for a week. You know what I mean? That guy was on the Giants? I don't even remember that.
Yeah, Ramiro Pena was brought up the other day, and I was like, when the hell was Ramiro Pena a Giant? And he was on the 2016 team, a team that was a winning team, and I didn't even remember him. So it's going to be tough to remember the likes of Connor Joe, Michael Reed, or Mike Gerber. Like, I will never remember some of these guys.
No.
You got to try what you can. Yeah, you got to try when you can when you're on a 68-win pace.
He's kicking the tires, and, you know, it's better than doing with, you know, with the status quo. And, you know, the status quo is not good enough, so at least he's trying. So many people are coming out, oh, Zaidi this, Zaidi that. Why didn't they get power hitters this offseason? I'm like, some of these – I hope none of our listeners are that dumb, but some of these Giants fans that come out on social media, you're like, do you know anything about baseball and how free agency and signings work? It's not like you can just, you know, log on to your video game and draft, you know, all of these superstars. That's not how baseball works. God damn it, you people.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's not, and it's going to take a while to build. And the whole point of having Bochy in his last season during Zaidi's first season, honestly, it's a hurdle rather than a help. It really is. It really is. But Bochy has earned the right to have this final season on his terms. And I think Zaidi respects that, and he's just trying to work around it.
No doubt. All right, well, why don't we talk about the week in review? Why don't you take it away for the first happy game? I think that was one of the few ones they had this week.
Yeah, it was probably the most complete win of the season last Tuesday. They won 14-4 at Colorado. And even in that game, they fell behind. Every single game we're about to talk about, the Giants fell behind early. But they won that game 14-4, and 13 of the 14 runs were scored with two outs, which was the most ever by a San Francisco Giants team, which, you know, makes me happy. I love the two-out hits. And it was the first time since like 97 that they had had, I think back in 97, they had a game where they had 12 two out hits, run scoring hits. And that was Mac's return a week ago Tuesday. So a week ago yesterday, he went 2-for-4 with a laser beam home run that like stuck in the fencing out there.
Yeah,
like
he that was hit pretty it.
Cool. So, that was like every replay on that. I kept watching like, wow, just to happen to hit it right there. And it was the most complete game the Giants played all season. You know, the offense clicked. The pitching staff kept it together because at Coors Field, no lead is safe, as we saw the next night. So, you know, for them to actually put together their best game of the season at Coors Field, you know, it left us all feeling with, you know, okay, a split with Cincinnati, you come out and then you win against Colorado. And I don't have any of the other real stats from that game in front of me. I just know that Mac, you know, he had a good day. Everybody in the lineup, up and down the lineup. I think Duggar had 3 hits that day. Mm-hmm. Just they put together a solid effort. But then they got snowed out the next day and turn around on Thursday and they fall behind 7-0 early and it's more of the same.
That was incredible because, you know, they had just the week previous, and we talked about it last podcast, for the fifth time, and they tied their biggest comeback ever in San Francisco Giants history, coming back and beating the Reds 12-11, ironically, after being down 8-0. Well, in this game, they were down 7-0, and a lot of people were sarcastically tweeting, "Ah, oh, we got them right where we want them." And even though they were joking about it, it absolutely came true. They ended up tying it at 8-8 at one point. So they erased the entire deficit, and then it was a little bit of back and forth throughout the game, and the Giants almost pulled it out in the end. I think Crawford was up with the tying run on second in the ninth inning, and they lost 12-11. The bullpen just, despite the starting pitcher woes, the bullpen also couldn't hold it. Again, it's Coors Field, yada, yada. But they did lose 12-11, which it was kind of a tough loss, but at the same time, you look at their moxie to come back, and their, you know, they didn't give up. Their stats were good. Their hitting was good. Their hitting has definitely improved. And coming back to the Tuesday win, which you had, because I missed that game, and you were texting me going, "Oh my God, they scored 13 of their 14 runs with 2 outs." And I was like, "Wait, what? That's insane." And that ties into one of the stats I was going to share today. The Giants, there's one of the few bright spots the Giants have, they're leading all of Major League Baseball with a .282 batting average with runners in scoring position and 2 outs. How about that?
Oh my God, I think I just had a heart attack. The Giants are leading in something?
They're leading in something. And yeah, not strikeouts or something like that. You know, I mean, they're leading with a pretty important stat because that is a clutch situation. Runners in scoring position and 2 outs. So, I mean, granted, if they had 13 out of 14 runs were scored, I'm sure that 282 was a 250 before that game. But point being, they're doing well above average and they're leading the whole league there. So one of the few bright spots we can look at. But again, if it wasn't for that last couple of weeks, the Giants might be, you know, 10, 12 games under 500 at this point.
Instead of the 7 games that they're under 500 at this point. Yeah, they, you know, that 12-11 game was that typical Coors game the day after. I mean, the snow. It snowed in the first inning. And who was it? Holland gave up homers to Arenado and Mark Reynolds in the snow. So, like, all those good feelings from that comeback win just went right out the window. And even though they did come back, you know, in typical Coors fashion, back and forth, and it's impressive that the Giants are hitting better. I mean, they really are. They're legitimately hitting better. Going to Cincinnati and Colorado got their hitting stroke back. Yes. And then the pitching just absolutely went to crap. And, you know, over the weekend, so they lost that game Thursday, 12-11. So they came home to face the Reds again on Friday night. And ex-Giants farmhand Luis Castillo was pitching for the Reds. This was his second time in a week facing the Giants. And he struck out 11 Giants in 6 inning pitch. And then Derek Rodriguez struggled again, and he gave up 4 runs, not in the first. This was the one game they didn't allow a run in the first inning this past week, but he gave up 4 runs in the second. And it was so bad that, like you had already mentioned in the transactions, that Rodriguez has been sent to Sacramento, which we talked about this on our last show, that if he doesn't get it together, maybe he does need to go to Sacramento and work something out. And we both actually agreed that the leash would be 2 more starts, but it was only 1 more start. Yeah. And you know, I don't blame them for that. I don't. The Giants, again, are trying to do what they can, but you don't want to kill a kid's confidence by having him continually beat up at the major league level. So, you know, they put up probably, after two of their best offensive explosions at Coors Field, they came home and they couldn't score a single run against the Reds. And Luis Castillo just absolutely carved them up for the second time in a week. He was the pitcher in that Sunday game in Cincinnati where they came back from down 4-0 and ended up winning that game. But this time there was no comeback to be had. And the Reds bullpen just was lights out the rest of the way. I think David Hernandez pitched a couple strong innings and really got to him. And I only mentioned that Luis Castillo is an ex-Giants farmhand because that's been talked about. But I will point out that not only did the Giants trade him, the Marlins traded him twice and the Padres traded him once.
Yeah, so we're not talking about last year. You know,
there's no crystal ball. You know what I mean? You can't you have to trade assets when they're in your farm system, when you have them, even if they're not assets yet. And that's what happened with Castillo. And good for him. Good for that guy starting to do well. But he absolutely shut the Giants down on Friday night in that 7-0 game. And it was just kind of back to the same old, same old. The Giants are at home. They can't score runs again.
Yeah, they get back to the friendly confines of Oracle Park, and it just didn't work out. The next day, on Saturday, May 11th, they fell behind again. 3 runs in the first inning by the Reds, given up by the Shark. And then he settled down after that. The Giants did score 1 first-inning run. They're 1 of 5 runs they've scored in the first inning. And they actually pulled ahead 4-3 in the fourth inning, but Cincinnati chipped away with single runs in the fifth and the seventh, and the Giants just couldn't muster anything else in 5-9, and they ended up losing that one-run game 5-4. Garrett got the win, Maranta got the loss, and Iglesias got his 8th save of the year. Yasiel Puig did go deep in that one, so very, very, very frustrating once again.
Yeah. Old friend Yasiel.
Yasiel, baby, Yasiel. So that was, let's see, what was his line that day? Samardzija had, those 3 in a runs and 4 innings. So,
yeah, so he settled down. I mean, he struck out 5 guys, but he had 3 walks. And looking back on the summary, I think, you know, he walked Senzel to start the game. And then Puig and then Joey Votto hit a triple, and then he got 2 outs. He struck out Suarez and Winker, and then Puig hit that homer. And it goes back to the Giants' pitching inability to close out innings. It's like a staff-wide problem. They have a hard time finishing off hitters, and they have a hard time finishing off innings. And, you know, again, we talked about this last time, and I don't know how the hell they fix that except to just do better. You know, there's really no magical. Yeah, there's no magical solution there. Just do better. And it was a shame, you know, because they did take the lead briefly, only to give it right back when Trevor got touched for that homer by Suarez. And then, like you said, Maranta gave it up in the top of the seventh. But they kind of rebounded themselves on Sunday, on Mother's Day, mm-hmm. Played probably the most entertaining game at Oracle Park yet this season. The Giants beat the Reds on Sunday 6-5. And it was a game that had everything Giants fans love. We had a Pablo home run. Again, they gave up 2 runs in the first inning. This time it was Bumgarner who gave up 2 runs in the first inning. Yeah. But Pablo had his back, and he had a 2-run homer in the bottom half to immediately tie the game back up. Of course, Bum then went out and gave up another run in the top of the second. But they were down 4-2, and Brandon Belt pinch hit in the seventh inning and tied the game with a pinch hit 2-run homer. And it was nice to see because Belt had an inflamed knee after trying to stretch for the bag the night before. And he kind of hurt his knee a little bit. And they made the nice late comeback. They scored those 2 runs in the seventh on the Belt homer. And then they put together just a good inning of hitting. Like the kind of inning where the keep the line moving mantra finally happened. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of, you know, we always talk keep the line moving. That's the Giants' mentality. And in that bottom of the eighth, when they were trailing by 1 run after giving up the lead, Longoria led off with a single. Pablo doubled. Williamson drove in the run on a ground out. Crawford struck out. And then Pilar hit his – I'm sorry, I'm – Crawford's like, we need a whole different show on Crawford. And then Pilar singled to drive in the lead run, which was Pablo. to take the lead finally, and then the Giants bullpen was able to shut it down. You know, Will Smith came in and he burned right through Senzel, Votto, and Suarez, the top three players in the Reds lineup. So Sunday was fun. You know, it was old school Giants baseball. They kept the line moving. They got those key home runs. Yes, Bumgarner didn't pitch his best game, but he also wasn't horrible. He kept them in it. And, you know, it was entertaining as hell. And in a season like this, that's what I want to see. I want to see entertaining games. And Sunday had it all. I even put it on our Facebook thing. It was a Mother's Day present for all of us.
Yeah, no, it was very nice. And I'm so happy that they actually came back and won their 10th one-run game of the year. And then they had the off day Monday, and Tuesday they opened up this two-game set with the Blue Jays. We already discussed this. The opener didn't work, allowing three runs in the first. Vlad Jr. goes off, hits two home runs. And yeah, it was just a sloppy game. But Panda again came through with the three-run home run, which provided their only offense of the year. And he's been one of the few bright spots lately. So that kind of recaps the week going 2-4. So, yeah, moving on, I wanted to kind of revisit an old friend of ours, just checking in with Hunter Pence. He has been having a bit of a renaissance here in the beginning of this year, and I love that he's having, you know, a resurrection. He made the roster, and he's been playing kind of part-time, but he's getting more playing time recently. He's had a little bit of a slump the last couple of games, but overall, he's still doing exceptionally well. Currently in 84 at-bats, he's hitting .298, but here's the key. He's got 7 bombs, and he's got 25 RBI. In over 230 at-bats last year with the Giants, so basically, what, 3 times the number of at-bats, he had 24 RBI all last year, and only 4 home runs. So, and he hit .220 or whatever it was, which actually would be fine on this year's Giants, by the way.
Yeah, he'd be like third. He'd be like the superstar. And his OPS is .987 when his career OPS is .795.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. And his WAR now, I mean, so far is almost 1. It's .8, which there's no Giant even close to that.
No, and somebody asked the other day, and I went and looked it up. How many times? Because Hunter, during this hot streak, he's been doing a good job of driving the ball the other way. Yeah, and somebody asked us, right, somebody asked us the other day, how many homers did he hit last year for the Giants the other way? The answer is zero. And he's hit 3 of them so far for Texas this year.
And so, one was robbed by Reddick.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. I'm not going to lie. If the Cubs and the Giants are not on my screen right now, it's the Rangers. Always. Yeah. They're not a good team, but they're entertaining. And, you know, Pence just he's found new life. He's changed his swing. There's a really good article on Fangraphs right now that talks about how his swing has changed a little bit. And you don't necessarily see it when you're watching because it's still that funky swing. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is he's not dropping his back shoulder. And he's not finishing with an uppercut follow through. The bat is staying level through the hitting zone. He's keeping it on more level plane. And it's nice to see Hunter still thriving. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was worried that he was going to make the big club, but he might be DFA'd sometime by now. And he absolutely has exceeded expectations.
Oh, absolutely. He has just been totally exceeding expectations. The Rangers are extremely happy. And it's cute to see Alexis, his wife, kind of tweeting about it and getting a lot of support from the fans. So they're doing fine. I'm really glad to see that. Yeah, because I was a little afraid, like you were, that either he wasn't going to make the team, or when he did, it was like, oh, if he falls on his face, he's going to be DFA'd, and that might be the end of his baseball career. But he's definitely resurrected it for now. He's hitting right around .300. Who knows? I mean, in another month, he could be around the Mendoza line, and he might be DFA'd. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. The Rangers definitely like his energy and his production right now. So good for Hunter. We miss you, and certainly we miss his bat right now. That's for sure.
Yep.
All right, so we talked about how the Giants are being outscored so heavily in the first inning and how few runs they're scoring in the first inning. But overall, they're still sitting in third to last place in the National League with a batting average of .222, third to last in home runs at .39, third to last in runs scored at 160. So even though their offense has ticked up a little bit in the last 2 weeks, overall for the season, it's still extremely poor at this point. Their pitching, which was their strength, and we were praising it just 2 weeks ago, Eric. Just 2 weeks ago, we were saying, boy, if it wasn't for the Giants pitching, where would they be? Well, their pitching has completely left them. They used to be second, third in the NL in ERA in the beginning of the year. They've plummeted all the way to 11th in team ERA at 4.54. I didn't even realize it was that high until I checked it this morning.
Yeah, and I don't know what to account for that, except I guess they fell back to the norm.
Mm-hmm. Even beyond the norm. They're not even average now. They're below average.
Yeah, because they were playing above their head a little bit at the beginning of the season,
yeah,
and certain things were getting, you know, fixed. But that's just the way a baseball season is. Sometimes weaknesses will get hidden, and strengths will not be strengths, and then other times it'll flip back and balance back out.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate we were kind of relying on that pitching, and I'm sure it will swing back a little bit in the other direction in the coming weeks. It's the ebbs and flows of baseball. One thing the Giants have always prided themselves, besides pitching, was also fielding. And I've noticed it in games. They've been sloppy. They've just been sloppy. Their defense has not been as locked down as it usually is. And it shows in the stats. They're also 11th in the National League in fielding percentage at .982. I know fielding percentage doesn't cover everything. There's runs saved and all these other metrics and percentage of chance of catching a ball and blah, blah, blah. And there's subjective judgment in the scorekeeper and how sometimes errors are judged and not judged. But it's still, I think, a fairly good barometer when you get to a decent sample size. And yeah, it's typically the Giants are in the high 980s and low 990s, but they're in the low 980s right now. So it's unfortunate. Their defense has definitely let them down.
Yeah, it's I'm to the point. I think that we've seen enough of Pilar in center field. I love the guy's hustle. I love the guy's heart, but he's not what he used to be. And I think it's time that the center fielder of the future takes over in center field.
You think Duggar should go over there?
Absolutely. Yeah. There was a ball last night that was hit over Pilar's head and it hit off his glove. But it wasn't necessarily that it hit off his glove. It was the route he took to the ball. He turned himself around like 3-4 different times, and you can't do that. You're going to lose sight of the ball, and then you're trying to keep track of so many things. And, you know, I actually had Blue Jays fans defensive, like, oh, you think Duggar is going to fix the team? No, I don't think that. I just want to watch the center fielder of the future. I don't want to watch this other guy who, again, I like Pilar as – you know, a player I like, he fits this organization, you know, he's a dirtbag. That's the kind of guy he is, but maybe it's time he shifted over and they let, you know, they let Duggar take over. But I'm looking at today's lineup. That's not going to happen. You know, Pilar's back in center field again, and Duggar's back in right field. And Tyler Beede was optioned back to AAA to make room for Sean Anderson, who's making the start this afternoon in his major league debut.
Yeah, that was a little unfortunate. Beede, I don't know. You think he has the stuff, but at the same time, like last night when he walked those guys and, you know, the run comes in, it was just, ugh. It's an ugly look. It's an ugly look.
Well, he just doesn't have control. Like, he had one inning where he struck out the side. I think it was the third inning. He struck out the side, and then he came out the fourth inning, and he was all over the place. And much like all the other Giants pitchers, he can't finish. And
Danville. It's amazing.
Sorry about that.
I don't know if he's going to be able to figure that, you know, that part of it out. But Beattie's going to be on the yo-yo this year. They're going to keep bringing him back up and giving him shots.
Yeah, I think so. Sorry for that audio. The Giants game is about to start, so I was trying to catch a little bit of the feed from the first inning. They haven't thrown the first pitch yet, so that was
crazy. No, we got we got like 9 minutes.
Yeah, we still got like 9 minutes. So let's talk about who's hot. Oh, we aforementioned Panda, 5-for-15 in the last week with 2 bombs and 4 RBI. He's been a breath of fresh air. He is definitely not just a mascot. He's actually contributing to this team in his pinch hitting and late inning replacements, but he's getting spot starts here and there. And I'm telling you, man, you know, Longo's had his days too, but he's also 3-for-17. I mean, some of the same starters are always appearing on this who's not list. We got Longo, 3-for-17. Craw, 2-for-18. He's down to a season average of .207. Mac, we talked about, .208. He hasn't hit a bomb after that first game. Everyone was so excited. See, told you should have called him up. And he's kind of fallen flat. But to your point, again, 2 base hits changes his batting average to .292. So, let's pump the brakes on him. And then Maranta has been a little shaky lately, 5 earned runs in his last 3 innings pitch. Pilar, you know, he's been raising his average. He's 6-for-17, Panic 5-for-14. So, but again, in the years past, I remember reading this who's hot list, like someone hit 600 for the week with four home runs, and someone, you know, went 10 innings and not allowed a run and two hits or something like that. We're not getting those kind of performances in these week-to-week stats, are we? I'm dredging for, like, hey, a guy went 5 for 15 this week. Woo! He's hot.
Yeah, hitting 333 is now the definition of hotness over the span of a week.
This is not player of the week material, people.
No, not even close to it. I mean, it's becoming very apparent that a certain era of Giants baseball is over, and yeah, I think we get reminded of it each day right now.
Yeah, it's frustrating. So the Giants are going to be starting here in about 5 or so minutes against the Blue Jays to wrap up that series. Yeah, I don't think it's going to rain too much. I just looked at the radar image because I'm also thinking about my Little League game tonight. And I don't know. I mean, there's no rain for the next few hours, so we might actually start the game tonight, much to my son's chagrin. He's like, I don't want to play today. But
well, hey, as long as you get in four, it'll be a full game.
There you go. And then they go to Arizona before coming home for a 7-game homestand next week against Atlanta and Arizona. So we don't have any this week in Giants history. Well, not to talk about right now, but Eric will probably get something back up.
I will. I missed last week because there was just a lot going on here. I didn't have a chance to put it together.
Yeah, no worries at all. No worries at all. I want to thank everyone for your support of the podcast and the articles and everything like that, and social media. We're getting good interactions and good amount of traffic. So we still want to hear any suggestions you might have on what you'd like to hear content-wise, if there's any new ways we can engage, if you did like, you know, Facebook Live or any kind of video. I mean, that stuff is a little bit harder to do, and it might take a little bit more work on the end of myself and Eric. But if the audio has been sufficient, also let us know about that. We're looking for ways to improve the podcast.
Yeah, I got nothing past it. What he said.
Sorry, what he said. Frog in my throat. Had to get some water there. All right, well, you can follow us collectively at TortureCast or individually on Twitter at 2OutHits for Eric. That's with the number 2, myself at ChadK21. Like us on Facebook. Come on over there. We put most of our content on the website, torturecast.com, and link it to Twitter and Facebook. We have an Instagram account. It's not always active, but give us a follow. We're going to maybe try and use that a little bit more. But do you have any other social media or things you want to talk about, Eric?
No, that about sums it up. We've been getting good interaction on the Twitter side of things. And shout out to Flan for either being a listener or at least liking what we have to say. It's always kind of a validation when an old school baseball guy like Flan likes the takes that we are coming with, because we're never going to pretend to be the computer-driven podcast. We are old school in and of ourselves. You know, we're both over 40. We're not of this newer generation that came up with the stats and spit a bunch of things in the computer out. You know, we're more apt to talk about, well, this guy's front hip is flying open and that's why he's coming off the ball, or, you know, this guy is dropping a shoulder, or this pitcher is doing this thing wrong mechanically. We're more apt to talk about those things than necessarily FIP and XFIP and WOBA and yaga ya juju and things like that. So, you know, I do appreciate that people do stick with us, because we are a little old school. We don't deny the new statistics, but we don't take 100% stock in them. There's got to be a mixture. And just like the Giants are trying to find balance by having ZED now, we're trying to find balance here.
Yeah, if you want the advanced metrics and saber metrics, definitely go check out fangraphs.com. They have some really interesting articles there. They even have a podcast. But we don't want to talk about all this stuff. I mean, we'll talk about certain stats and key stats, but we're not going to go heavy into the analytics, because we're just going to lose everyone. I'm going to lose myself in that kind of conversation.
Yes. It's overwhelming. So, it really is. It's not entertaining. No, it's not. I mean, if I tell you that somebody has a 1.46 this, if you don't know how to compare it to something, it doesn't matter. But yeah, we all know what good batting averages should be. We all know what good on-base percentages should be, what OPS should be, what runs driven in still we'll talk about. And that's why we still talk about that stuff. So I appreciate our listeners for still enjoying that brand of baseball.
All right, well, that will do it for episode 165 of the TortureCast. We'll be back next week, probably on Monday again, for episode 166. Until then, for Eric, this is Chad signing off, and we'll see you next time. Kaboom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.